Hi, Katie.
Hello, Dominic.
We're doing something a bit different this week.
Yeah, I noticed. No jingle. So we're not doing good week or bad week then?
Nope.
There's no happy ending?
Sadly not. We're going to be talking about neo-Nazis.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do have to. Because life isn't just fun and games, Katie. And sometimes we have to talk about the hard stuff. But I'm hoping this episode isn't going to be non-stop depressingness, because we are going to be in the company of one of Hungary's most jolly people, Philip Polak.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, you shaved your head like Dominic.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I also shaved it. I went for Britney Spears on my scalp.
You might remember Philip's voice from an episode we made this summer, which was about something very different, a crazy hitchhiking trip he took from Hungary to Sweden.
Psychedelic adventures in Potsdam. We skinny-dipped in the canals of Bruges. The whole trip was a blast.
What can I tell you about Philip? He is 23. He grew up in Slovakia, but he's from the Hungarian minority there. That's important, actually. It's going to come up later. He lives in Budapest. He studied politics and graduated this summer, and he's now interning at a think tank. So why are we talking to him about neo-Nazis this week? Well, it starts with a WhatsApp message that Philip sent us a few months ago. Maybe you can read it to us, actually, Dominic.
Okay. Hello, Dominic. So, a classmate of mine in uni is a member of the new radical right-wing fascist group called Legio Hungaria, or the Hungarian League. Would you be interested in me hooking you up with an interview with this peculiar acquaintance of mine? If you're interested, let me know. If not, that's okay as well. So, what was your first reaction, Katie, when we got this text?
I mean, like, run away as fast as we can? I mean, yeah, I just didn't want to engage with it. I guess my biggest worry was I do not want our podcast to give a platform to a neo-Nazi. And we definitely don't want to normalize neo-Nazis in any way. And it also feels like going willingly into a conversation with someone with these views is something we should feel especially cautious about, because neo-Nazi groups have been going out over the past couple of years and like actively seeking publicity and trying to use the media to convince people to spread their propaganda.
Yeah, and the fact that this guy, a far-right activist named Lutzi, the fact that he was actually apparently willing to speak to us set some alarm bells going that maybe he was hoping to get publicity out of this interview and maybe even win some people over. Even though, obviously, this podcast has a pretty progressive fan base and our listeners probably aren't the kind of people who might be won over by the far right.
As far as we know, anyway. But yeah, there are a lot of reasons why we wouldn't want to talk to this person. But at the same time, it also felt like a pretty rare opportunity to get inside a neo-Nazi's head. The Hungarian League, this movement that Lazi is a member of, they're pretty extreme. They like to burn rainbow flags at pride marches, that kind of thing. And yet, from what Philip was telling us, you wouldn't know, interacting with this guy at university on a daily basis, that he held these extreme views. He also came from a pretty similar background to Philip. They're the same age. They're from pretty much the same region. And part of us was really curious to try and work out how these two people could end up holding such different views. But at the same time, obviously, we were incredibly anxious about crossing the line between trying to understand what was happening here and somehow justifying it or giving it a platform.
So we ummed and ahed about it for months, actually. But what we decided to do in the end was to get Philip and his classmate to sit down for a conversation and see where it went. Maybe we wouldn't use the recording at all, but at least we'd give it a go. So we told Philip to go and book some recording time in a recording studio in Budapest, and off they went. And then a few weeks later, in our inbox popped up a recording of this conversation they'd had and a transcript of the conversation in English.
And actually, we were pretty impressed by how Philip had navigated this nightmare of a conversation. Looking back on it, this whole thing put Philip in a really awkward position. This is not someone he agrees with at all. But it was also a classmate. It was someone he had to try to coexist with in the same class for the rest of the year. So it had to stay civil. So it wasn't the same kind of interaction that you might get between a journalist and a neo-Nazi stranger who they're never going to see again. But at the same time, it's not like Philip just let Lazi spew hatred for an hour and a half. He tried to change his mind. He challenged him.
Filip and Laci spoke in Hungarian, obviously, so we're not going to play the whole conversation here, although you will hear some of it in the background. It will be available, password protected, on our website. More info about that at the end of the show. But what we thought would be better and more useful is to talk to Filip about how that conversation with Laci went. Why did he want to do it in the first place? And what did he learn from it?
And even, was there any chance of changing Laci's mind? Filip, thank you for joining us. I guess we should start at the beginning with you meeting Laci. When did you discover that you were in a politics class with a neo-Nazi?
Well, I think it happened actually after class. We were supposed to watch a football game together with three other mates of mine, and he was there. And it was just as we started the first semester. And it was a Champions League game, and it was a Tuesday night, and we had a couple of beers in. I mentioned the fact that, well, I'm of the diaspora, living in the north or the south of Slovakia. Well, he immediately pulled down his shirt all the way down to his chest, where he had this incredibly awful tattoo of the former big Hungary, which was, you know, larger in size before the First World War's peace agreements. He then just pushed me on my back and said, I'm going to get you back into the country, man. So I wasn't sure that he was a Nazi then, but obviously very far right. And then we got into talking, and yeah, he wasn't shy about it. I think within the first 10 minutes, it was as clear as day that he's very involved in the Nazi scene. And yeah, I think that's a new.
And so this tattoo of Laci's, it's a map of Hungary when it was quite a lot bigger, including quite a lot of land that is today in neighboring countries, Serbia and Romania and Slovakia and Croatia. Can you explain, in case it's not obvious, why this map is so controversial?
That symbol pops up even in Hungarian Christmas markets and all kind of cultural heritage preservation. But it's been exploded for far-right propaganda and in speeches. It's all a claim that people who are obsessed about the map and about the size of Hungary obviously want to be these parts, come back to Hungary. So it's a very chauvinistic affair that mostly aligned with hating Romanians and Slovakians and basically all the neighbors about how they mistreat Hungarian minorities.
And Laci was showing you this tattoo because he thought, oh, you are kind of brothers in a way, because he assumed you were fighting for the same cause. Is that right?
Yeah. I think he tried to show solidarity to the cause and trying to be appreciative that he's welcoming. And to some extent, I welcome it because it's nice that, you know, people care, but it's just that I don't necessarily fight for that goal. But yeah, he obviously tried to make it as a nice gesture.
What's he like in person, Laci? I mean, did he fit your idea of what a neo-Nazi would be like on a personal level?
Absolutely not. I'm going through a massive cognitive dissonance fight within myself regarding his personality, because he's actually a nice person, which is very odd, and I haven't figured out how that even is possible. But yeah, he's welcoming, he's friendly. He's even progressive in means that you wouldn't expect of him. Like, for example, we had a teacher in university who was a bit of an asshole to women, and he was actually the only guy who jumped up immediately out of his seat and started defending that this is pretty old-fashioned and we shouldn't do things according to this. And then again, he also hates gypsies and black people and Jews, so not what I imagined at all.
And so he's a member of this pretty extreme group called Legio Hungaria, or the Hungarian League. Who are they? Have they been around for a long time?
No, they're actually a very recent organization. They are very well organized in international terms. They have a lot of similar groups to them from Ukraine and Romania and Russia and Germany, who they are very strong in contact with. and they kind of co-align their agendas, have meetings, tangle up together.
So if you were going to set out in broad strokes what the Hungarian League believe in, how would you sort of summarize that?
Well, the thing that Laci always returned to during the interview is old family values preservations, which is just a code for outlandishly horrific homophobia. And they have a long-lasting tradition with other groups to harass the Pride parade in Budapest and try to block it. It's clear that in the last 5 years, I think more or less since the migration crisis, there has been a network development within the far right to preserve very old-lasting far right talking points like pure or white race and obviously not allowing migrants to move within the European Union. And Ligue Hungaria is, I think, an offspring of that sprout in that it was formed later and it doesn't have necessarily much to do within its agenda against migration. When you would talk about that with them, obviously they would be against it. But as I said, I think they focus far more on homophobia these days.
Why did you want to talk to Laci on tape?
I picked Laci and I decided to have an interview with Laci because for me it was incredibly peculiar how a man who is my classmate in a political science course, and he's actually a nice man as a personal note, how he can be deceived into that. And I think it was fairly important to understand why this is happening, how it could be prevented, what motivates a person to become part of it. And when they're getting confronted with it in a non-offensive manner, what would they speak of?
Were you surprised that he agreed to talk to you? Like, why do you think he agreed to talk to you?
Well, I asked him the same question a little bit indirectly towards the end of what he was trying to achieve with the interview and why he agreed with it. I think what he mentions is that he feels very much misunderstood, that people try to label him, but doesn't really offer him a chance for a conversation and that he's always open for a conversation. The other thing that he mentions is obviously that he tries to basically seduce other listeners to his thoughts. But I don't think that that necessarily happened during the course of the interview.
I thought you did a good job at challenging him, given the circumstances. And in terms of trying to work out how he ended up being attracted to the far right, we know that Laci joined the youth movement of Jobbik, the far right party, which has in recent years moved towards the center right and tried to become a bit more socially acceptable. We know that Laci has since become demoralized with that party. They didn't feel right wing enough, and that's why he joined this new group, the Hungarian League. But what do we know in terms of how he set off down this far right path in the first place?
Well, as far as he shared, he went through a couple of bad experiences with the Roma community in his upbringing town. His bike got stolen, his FIFA CD got stolen. Obviously, when you invite people over in your house, you feel kind of shocked that by these events that your friends, apparently, according to Laci, end up burgling you. And that kind of scared him off. So I don't think that he's necessarily a very socially open person. And of the few people with whom he surrounds himself, a couple of them already betrayed him. In his view, all of them were of gypsy descent. So that kind of formed a very negative image in him. Then he kind of politicized when he was able to vote in his first election. When he was just turning 18, he gathered some information about it, looked through a couple of candidates and completely radicalized basically through YouTube videos, which is an astonishing fact for me. He just got further sucked into that void by the voices of Sanács Szegedi, Lelőd Novák and Gábor Vona, all the front runners of the then Jobbik party, which spoke the truth that nobody dared to speak in these days and all of that sort of mumbo jumbo. So he decided to become a member of Jobbik's youth wing as well, and has been for a long time, all the way till the last election, till 2018.
Right. We should add that rights activists have for a very long time pointed out that the ethnic Roma minority suffer from widespread prejudice in Hungary and suffer from a large amount of intimidation from the far right in particular. Lucien, you soon got on to talking in more detail about the Hungarian League itself, this relatively new far right group that he has now joined. One of your questions was about this physical and military preparedness of the group. This seems pretty sinister. Is the military side of the group something he tried to downplay?
Yes, yes. He tried to defend it as a sports scheme, and it reminded me a lot of about old Greek philosophy that in a healthy body lives a healthy spirit. But obviously that's not the main motivation behind it. I think genuinely that this is a very deeply embedded kind of masculinity desire within the group. Having said that, obviously the potential of escalation is always within these groups. So I think he wanted to downplay it, but also I don't think that they necessarily seem to be wanting to become violent. It's, I think, just natural bullshit.
Ez megvan a mozgalomban, ez a militarizmus, tehát hogy igazából ezt igazából úgynevezik, hogy konzervatív.
And the thing that he kept coming back to again and again was LGBT rights. He's very openly homophobic. Why is he so obsessed with this one issue?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. I tried to come back to that question through a number of ways during the interview because I felt that he was kind of bailing on the answer. But he has fixed plans with his current girlfriend to settle down and to get married and to get children. But he feels very much threatened that his son probably would turn out gay, which would be dismal for him. Why he's particularly afraid of that is still a bit of a mystery to me, because as he says during the interview, he has, well, I wouldn't call them friends, but acquaintances with whom he lives in one dormitory who are gay, and he doesn't harass them or treat them worse in any manner. The only point when he became a little bit aggressive was when he was explaining the matters of his future family. Like, there's something within him that doesn't allow him to process even the idea that his upbringing would become gay.
At one point, he even says he doesn't believe a child can be straight if they're raised by two mothers. And you at that point challenged him and pointed out that there is absolutely no proof of a link between the sexuality of your parents and your own sexuality. How did he take it?
He kind of backed away from that issue then, which was surprising. But he mentioned that he might check out the facts, and he won't say anymore because he doesn't feel informed well enough to get into an argument about that. And he said he's just going to check out the stats, which was nice.
Which is kind of extraordinary, considering that this is a view that's pretty central to his party's ideology and to what he's preaching. And he exposed that he's not actually sure about the statistics behind these things, and that his opinion is actually not based on fact.
The other thing that came up a lot, which again he seemed shockingly ill-informed about, was Hitler.
He mentions Adolf Hitler, right, very often. And he has a Waffen-SS tattoo on his right arm. When we talk about Hitler, he repeatedly goes back to say that, I really have to get into his books now, because he's been on my list for a long while. And dude, you're out here preaching Hitler's words that you're barely familiar with. You have a tattoo on that. You decided to be part of this for the next 50 years of your life, and you have been part of this since you're 18. So when did you come around to such an incredible strong fascination without any information whatsoever? This is truly phenomenal. But if you think about it, it kind of explains it as well, because nobody becomes a fascist due to well-informed reasoning of fascism. Like, it's like, oh, right, yeah, this adds up.
But this is one of the striking things about your conversation, I think, because, you know, Lazzi comes across as someone who is articulate, actually quite chillingly articulate at points. But then there's so many inconsistencies in what he says, and so many It's just big gaps in the way that he seems to have thought things out.
The reason why I was fascinated with him in the first place, why I wanted to have an interview with him, because it's just very interesting to see that a man can layer his lines of thought in a very coordinated and very coherent and cohesive way. And then when it comes to the most inner beliefs, which kind of form the core of his identity, it's just fairly sloppy.
Miatt lett ez feltetoválva, tehát ugye mondtam is, hogy annyira még nem ástam bele Adolf Hitler.
During the interview, he did say some pretty vile things about Jewish people, as well as spouting some infamous anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. There was, though, this very interesting moment when you pointed out that Hitler would not have considered Lhasa himself to be Aryan, to be part of the master race. And you wondered whether this bothered him or not.
He claimed that Hitler's word has to be adopted to to our age, and that you can't take every sentence in Mein Kampf as verbatim true, but you have to consider the societal pieces of the day. I can't even begin of how I would approach this line of thought, because he's obviously a fundamentalist of his teachings, even though he doesn't know about them, but yet they have to be developed to come in age to fit his goal. It's very, very confusing if you try to think of a rational order of how this came even to be. But yeah, this was his answer to this quest that, I mean, in 2019, he wouldn't know, 2020, he wouldn't be thinking like that. So yeah, I think he has a peace of mind in that and doesn't seem to be bothered with that.
Ultimately, Philip, do you think there's any chance of Lhasa changing his views?
I don't think that necessarily much will change in his life, though, but maybe, I don't know. I believe in change. I wouldn't be doing political science if I wasn't. So yeah, maybe I'm a bit idealistic, but I hope that he has a more understanding, or at least criticism towards his own beliefs in the way that he's not going to deny them, but at least will scrutinize them.
And what about you, Philip? I mean, some people would say there's something fundamentally wrong with the idea of sitting down with someone with these beliefs, and that trying to understand them is somehow trying to excuse them in some way. Did you feel like this was a useful experience for you?
It was very revealing about organizatory matters of the far right, because obviously you try to avoid their airtime as much as possible, which is completely right. I completely agree with that you shouldn't necessarily be broadcasting these people. But to neglect their cause is not the same as neglect their monitoring. And I think that's a massive difference here that more people should maybe keep in mind. This was just a very interesting portrait of a young human being in more or less in the same biological categories as me. As 20 years old, student, male, fairly nice upbringing, come from a similar region in Jura, and yet completely different ways in life. I was just curious about that. And now I know. So that's a relief, if you can call it that.
Why a relief?
A relief to, I don't know, finally be able to say that now I kind of know how these people tick. So I was thirsty for the reasoning and how a two-hour interview with a neo-Nazi would go, because I haven't done that. And now I have.
So after going through that extraordinary conversation, how did you get back to normal life and round up the interview?
One of the many regrets, I think, as with always with broadcasting, is that you just stop recording at the wrong moment. And as soon as we left the recording, went back actually to university. So we walked along the way. He started to ask me about why I chose to be the way I chose to be. And I wrote up an example of how a very dear friend of mine came out to me, and how our friendship just grew massively due to just empathy and understanding. And there was this very revealing and nice silence. So some sort of reflection was going on. After the interview ended and we had this nice conversation, we kind of plunged back right into uni life. Like I remember parting ways with him two other friends just happened to stand by the coffee automat that we have in the alley there. Just started chatting with them, and we had class in 10 minutes. And yeah, that's how that experience more or less ended.
If you speak Hungarian, you can listen to Philip's full conversation with Laci on our website, europeanspodcast.com, and you'll also find the full English language transcripts there. After giving it quite a lot of thought, we have decided to password protect those files. We wanted to make sure that people had to listen to this podcast first and understand all the context before taking a look at them.
It's a very sneaky way of forcing people to listen to our podcast, Katie.
I know, right? But for those of you who do want to listen to the original interview or read an annotated transcript in English, the password is Hungary2020, all lowercase.
Huge thanks, of course, to Philip Polak for going through this really intense experience to make a podcast for us. We also want to thank Natalie Nugared and Emily Schulteis for their editorial advice on how to talk about these issues in a responsible way.
And big thanks also go to Rosa Tekaula for the special artwork for this episode, and Jim Barn, as always, for the music.
This was a special episode of The Europeans, which was made possible by supporters of this podcast. If you'd like to help us keep making it, we'd be hugely grateful if you could chip in a few euros or dollars a month. You can do that at patreon.com/Europeans podcast.
We'll be back next Wednesday for the last episode of 2020, in fact.
Can we bring the happy ending back?
Yes, I think it's definitely time. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.